Watershed Wellness Podcast. My name's Eric Gray. I'm your host today. I'm also the guest today. I want to remind you that you can find the Watershed Wellness Podcast at watershedwellnesspodcast.com. And there you'll find a forum where you can submit questions, comments. You can recommend topics that you might be interested in hearing more about, and so on. So we're really happy to hear from you. So reach out at any time. So I'm actually recording from the Portland Clinic today. And while I was just here, I had several patients this morning, and then I was working on those cases and making some Chinese herbal formulas for other folks. And it got me to thinking just about my practice and how I support people through, especially through changes. So, you know, many medical providers, you know, apart from just providing the service they provide during the visit, whether that's hands-on work or prescriptions or whatever, they will often also give advice, right? So if you go to your medical doctor, for instance, during the course of discussing your lab values or the exam findings, the doctor may talk to you about your diet. They may talk to you about exercise, right? So these are the kinds of advice, you know, and then more holistic providers, because of the nature of our practice and how we fit into the medical environment at large, we often get to know our patients a little bit more deeply. And, you know, I would go so far as to say intimately, although obviously what I mean by that is just that we get to know a little bit more of a patient's personal life than would a medical doctor. Part of that is because we end up spending a lot more time on average with our patients. And part of it is just the nature of the medicine. In Chinese medicine, for instance, your emotional life, your family life, these things can have impacts on seemingly unrelated medical disorders, you know, even allergies or back pain. And so knowing how your life is going, knowing what kinds of things you're struggling with internally can be immensely helpful for practitioners like me. So I find myself talking to people about that kind of thing a lot. And of course, that inevitably means that they'll ask me, hey, what should I do about that? And I'll give them an answer. So, you know, a big part of my practice is just having these conversations. You know, and this isn't the case for all patients, of course. Some patients come in, they've got back pain, they've got neck pain, they've got, you know, a cold, they've got a stomach ache or something like that. We resolve that acute complaint, and, you know, we may have some follow-up visits to mop up behind that problem, but we may not engage in a more extended relationship. But the vast majority of my patients, I end up becoming a regular practitioner for them and somebody that they touch base with on a fairly regular basis. This is, of course, especially true for those of my patients who have chronic pain or other chronic health conditions, of course. I see them quite a bit. And even other folks, sometimes they'll come in for a simple complaint and then we'll develop a more lasting relationship, me helping them with other things that come up and so on. And so usually the longer that I am seeing a patient, you know, say, you know, 6 visits, 10 visits, 12 visits, 20 visits, you know, a few years of visits, that's really where this starts to pick up. I really start to, because you start to see patterns in the way that people are behaving out in the world and what consequences those are having on their health. So it's just a kind of a natural outgrowth of that reality. So anyway, since I do this so much, I of course you know, have seen a lot of successes and of course some failures and in myself and in others. And by that I mean somebody attempts to make a change in some aspect of their lifestyle in order to support themselves and they fail to navigate that change, at least in the short term. And so, you know, quitting smoking, picking up an exercise program, changing a diet, these are big things, big changes. And even if you have the support of a practitioner, it can be very difficult to make those changes. And so over the years working with people, I've started to understand those things that seem to help people be more successful and also those things that sabotage even people who are very excited about making a change. You know, that's really the curious thing is that, you know, the vast majority of folks I work with, they're, even though, you know, nobody's excited about starting some great big new exercise program or, you know, changing their diet or changing their posture or any of these kinds of things. It's not that people get excited about it, but I do think the vast majority of my patients, there's a certain acceptance and, you know, some excitement about making these changes and the hope that they will make a difference, you know, in pain or in happiness or whatever it is. Despite this excitement, or despite the real need, such in the case of somebody who, for instance, smokes a pack of cigarettes a day, you know, and there it's not even necessarily excitement, but just kind of fear, or you know, a concern, a health concern, a very valid one. You know, even if there is that fear, even if there is that excitement, even if a person feels very prepared to make a change, they can still kind of fail to navigate it because it's difficult. So that's the first thing I want to say, is that the most important thing to realize is that this is not something you can just do but with snapping your fingers. Will, just the sheer force of will, very often doesn't get the job done. We all know people who smoked a pack a day for 30 years, and then one day they just decided to quit, and they quit. And those people usually are very excited about telling other people that that's the way to quit. But unfortunately, that strategy, while simple and elegant, doesn't really work for most people. So I just wanted to talk about some of the things that I did see, or that I have seen over time, that help people to be successful, in the hopes that this will be helpful to you. One last point I want to make before I get into that is that the reason that I work on lifestyle factors in the way that many, you know, Chinese medicine practitioners, naturopaths, massage therapists do that kind of work is, you know, partly because we're often asked. Somebody says, "Oh, I want to make a change," and they need help. But really, it's because these kinds of things tend to make treatment more effective, and not only do they make treatment more effective, but they often create kind of a space for transformation for the patient. So, you know, your average patient who comes in for acupuncture for their back pain is not looking for some big life transformation, but often that is what ends up happening, especially if you're engaged with a practitioner over time. You know, if you make these small changes, small lifestyle changes, you know, for instance, drinking more water, or you know, eating a little bit more protein, or eating some, you know, fewer sugars. These very simple lifestyle changes, they may seem like they won't have much of a, you know, broader impact. But in fact, what I see is that sometimes those little actions become a doorway through which a person can walk and really make a lot of large-scale, profound changes for themselves in a way that I never would have guessed or advised. So you know, that's one of the reasons I like to work with folks on these changes, is because I do find that aside from just doing what they were intended to do, they tend to have really diverse positive effects. I find that folks run into three main problems when they try to make these changes. So these are my patients. These are things that I've seen in patients over the years. And also, you know, frankly, coming from my own experience and experience with my friends and family members. So the first problem, and probably the biggest one, is that people try to make too many changes too quickly, or the scale of the changes they try to make is too big. You know, quite simply, people's eyes are bigger than their stomach. You know, you try to make huge lifestyle changes. So this is the common way this happens, is that you have a, you know, holiday season of immense gluttony and celebration, and what ends up happening is that you feel terrible, and first of January rolls around, and you realize you need to make a change. And so, you know, most people in that case, especially if they have a particularly difficult hangover, they won't just say, "I'm going to cut back on my drinking." They'll say, "I'm going to quit drinking, I'm going to start jogging, I'm going to become a rock climber, and I'm going to move to Australia." You know, it's like all of the things. And, you know, there's a lot I could say about where that impulse comes from. But I want to recommend that anytime you're trying to make a change, that you try to do so in as calm and as limited and simple a manner. It's better to take one small step and have that be a permanent one than to make a giant leap and then have to fall back. So that's number one. Number two is engaging in what is spoken about in some literature as black and white thinking. So this is kind of a cognitive error where we think either I have to be perfect at a thing or I'm a terrible human being, right? that's the way it goes. And so I want to encourage you, if you're trying to make a change in your life, that you don't necessarily make it kind of an all or nothing type of proposition. So, you know, let's say that you're a person who doesn't drink very much water, and you know you're supposed to drink, say, 80 ounces a day. And you right now you drink 20. You know, this, I mean, the two are connected, of course. You know, that making a smaller change is also defeating this black and white thinking, right? Because you could say, instead of trying to drink 80 ounces of water all at once, what I'm going to do is just try to get to 40, right? And the point of the concept of black and white thinking is to say that sometimes, even if you know it's going to be a step-by-step approach, you'll say, oh, 40 ounces isn't anything. It's, you know, it's like you haven't achieved anything until you've gone the full measure. I really try to encourage my patients to realize that every step along the path towards healing a certain behavior, every step matters. And so even when you haven't gone quite all the way, even when you haven't quite reached your goal, all that space from here to there, that entire transformative path, is valuable. And so remembering that can really help you to enjoy the process instead of just always waiting for it to be done. And so the third and final problem that I see people running into when they make these lifestyle changes is they just are not patient enough. They don't leave enough time for the transformation to take place. And in particular, if somebody successfully makes a lifestyle change, say quitting smoking, say drinking more water, say exercise, whatever it is, they often expect for the changes that they're looking for to happen right away, you know, that all of a sudden they're going to feel immensely better and everything is going to be better in their life. Lifestyle change, true healing, long-term healing, really, it's not a process that can be forced. I always tell people that it's less like growing a weed and more like growing a redwood. It takes time. It takes presence. It takes patience. And very often we don't have that, especially if we're afraid, right? So if you're a smoker and you realize it's going to kill you, you may engage in this kind of black and white thinking and emergency thinking, and often that's self-defeating. It would be better to find, you know, now I do want to say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have used the example of smoking, because there are certain types of addictions and certain types of behaviors that need to be interrupted immediately. I still do think that there are gentler approaches that are often more effective for people, such as instead of just quitting nicotine right away, trying the various supplementary forms of nicotine out there, gum and so on, patches and these types of things. People feel like that's a failure. That's that black and white thinking. They're like, oh, if I have to use a crutch, then I'm not really doing it. And of course, that's not the case at all. Just getting away from smoking tobacco smoke into your lungs is a tremendous benefit. That can be one step in the right direction. Of course, your mileage may vary, and there's everybody has a different situation. But in general, if you can just hold back from making too large changes, being too impatient with yourself, and believing that the only way to do things is to do them perfectly, it will help you immensely in actually making these changes and making very positive changes in your health. So I do have just four quick tips if you want to make a change. Aside from working with a practitioner, I love working on people and making lifestyle changes. So it's certainly something you could come see me for. Any of our naturopathic practitioners, any of our Chinese medicine practitioners, they all do this kind of work of supporting people through nutritional, lifestyle, and other types of changes. So it's something we really enjoy doing. But here's four things that might help you if you're seeking to make a change on your own, or even something to support you if you're working with a practitioner. Number one is tracking. If you don't keep track of how well you're doing, it'll be very difficult to evaluate yourself. It's easy to trick yourself and think you're doing better or even worse than you are. So keeping accurate data is very important. There's lots of apps out there that help you track habits. You can also just use a simple spreadsheet. You can do it on paper, on a computer. Number two is I think you should replace a difficult to break habit like smoking or another addiction with something that fills a similar urge but in a different setting. So, you know, if what you enjoy about smoking is just hanging out with folks outside, then maybe find another way to hang out with folks outside that would fulfill that interest without you having to hang out with the smokers, right? So again, it's maybe a more difficult example since smoking does have that more addictive quality. But I think you get the point. The point being that instead of just saying, I'm not going to do Thing X anymore, try to figure out why you were doing Thing X in the first place, and if there's something else you can do that will fill a similar urge without repeating the behavior. Number three is partner with somebody else. You know, this is the oldest advice in the book, but if you work with another person who's either going through or has been through the change that you've been through, it can be a tremendous benefit. And so I definitely recommend, you know, a family member, a friend, a colleague, if they're, you know, seeking to cut down on their drinking, if they're seeking to get more movement in their life, that can be a tremendous benefit to you. And the last point is, you know, reward yourself. And what I think is that if you're trying to quit something, let's say you're trying to drink more water, if you have a week of that increased water intake, do something nice for yourself, and not something you would always do, and not something that is going to make your dehydration worse, right? So going out and getting drunk is maybe not the best way to celebrate that you're drinking water. But do something truly nice for yourself that you might otherwise not do. You know, so if you like to go shopping, maybe you go shopping if you can afford that. Or maybe you never make it to the beach, and so you go to the beach. And really committing to those changes and committing to those rewards can be a very valuable way to kind of trick yourself into making a change that maybe is more difficult to make. So those are four ways, you know, tracking, replacing the habits with something similar but obviously different, and partnering with somebody else, and then having a regular schedule of rewards. All those things should really help you to be more successful in the changes that you want to make. So anyway, I hope this was a brief podcast to talk through these elements. And remember, you can find our podcast at Watershed Wellness podcast.com and ask us questions, make comments, and we'll be back next week with an interview with another practitioner. All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.